Things haven't been going so well for Shmuel Ash, a biblical scholar in Jerusalem. His girlfriend has left him to marry her former boyfriend, his family has disowned him, and he finds himself abandoning his studies and thesis. And then Shmuel comes across a posting to keep an older gentleman intellectual company. He takes the job, and that begins his friendship with Gershon Wald and his caretaker, Atalia Abravanel. It's how Amos Oz's latest novel called Judas begins. It is his return to fiction for the first time in over a decade. Amos Oz is, of course, one of Israel's most celebrated authors. His memoir, A Tale of Love and Darkness, was an international bestseller. It's been translated into 28 languages, and this new book is already on its way to being translated into 12. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and I'm very pleased it has brought Amos Oz back to our show. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me again.
As I said, this is your first novel in over a decade. Does this grow out of some of the nonfiction writing that you've been doing?
Well, everything grows out of everything else. The line between my fiction and my nonfiction is the following. Each time I agree with myself 100%, I don't write fiction. I write angry articles telling my government to go to hell. They never listen, but I write the article again and again. But each time I find more than just one voice inside myself over anything at all. When I'm in a slight disagreement with myself, then I know I am pregnant with a story or a novel.
And you come out with a novel of ideas.
Yes.
There's not a lot of plot here, but there is plot.
There is plot, and I think it's a delicate plot, but it's a very intense plot. And a novel of ideas is not at all a manifesto. Not even a bunch of contrasting manifestos. It's a novel about people who change their thinking and change their feelings at the same time.
The book's title refers to the story of the New Testament. Is Judas's betrayal something Israeli Jews have incorporated into their culture?
Every Jew in the world bears this cross on his or her back. The story about the 30 pieces of silver, the most famous pieces of silver in history, and the most notorious kiss in history, the kiss of the traitor and the God killing, is the nastiest story ever told in human history. More people died because of this story than because of any other story ever told. This story was the cause for inquisition, persecution, expulsion, tortures, and Holocaust.
So it was taught in a negative way when you were going to school in the kibbutz?
Well, yes, all of us were taught to believe that the story of Judas is actually the Chernobyl of Western anti-Semitism.
But don't a lot of Christians also live in Israel?
Well, look, you may love Israel and you may love the Jewish people and at the same time assume that there is something deeply evil about these people which needs to be corrected, repaired, or redeemed.
Shmuel's thesis is about Jewish attitudes toward Jesus. What are the main issues with the gospel of Judas that Shmuel struggles with? Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when I was about 16-year-old, a kibbutz boy, and my classmates went to spend time on the basketball or chasing girls, I was no good at either. I went to the library and read the Gospels, which are never taught in any Israeli or Jewish school. I read the Gospels because I realized that without the Gospels, I won't understand Renaissance art or the music of Bach or the novels of Dostoevsky. I fell in love with Jesus, although I never agreed with him on many issues. He and I, like any two Israelis, are in disagreement.
Well, much of what Jesus said came out of Hillel. It was part
Absolutely.
Of current thinking of the time.
Absolutely. I loved his tenderness, his sense of humor, his warmth, his directness, his bluntness. At the same time, I never agreed with him about the possibility of universal love or about the fact that we ought to be forgiven because we know not we are doing what we are doing. Yes, we ought to be forgiven sometimes, but yes, we do what we are doing. We know what we are doing when we inflict pains on others. However, I liked Jesus, and I hated the Judas story because it's a bad story, badly written story. It should have been edited out of the Gospels by any decent editor.
But what about Shmuel? Does he view Judas as a traitor?
No. In fact, Shmuel proposes, offers, a totally different version of the story. According to Shmuel's version, Judas was the most loyal of all of Jesus' disciples. In fact, Judas believes in Jesus more than Jesus ever believed in himself, according to this story. In fact, when Judas finally hangs himself, according to the Gospel, Shmuel Ash adds, "Thus died the first Christian, the last Christian, the only Christian," which is a very provocative sentence. However, he believed that Judas persuaded Jesus to go to Jerusalem and get crucified in order to redeem the world. He will get off the cross. The whole world will kneel. He will tell human race, love one another, and the kingdom of heaven begins. This is what Shmuel Ash thinks about Judas.
I can't imagine that many of his Israeli compatriots would agree with that.
Well, I don't write novels or articles for that matter in order to seek agreement. I never ran for office, you know. And yes, some of my work in fiction and outside fiction is provocative, and I know it.
My guest is Amos Oz. His latest work is a novel called Judas. I don't want to include any spoilers, but with a title like Judas, the reader can assume that something bad is going to happen. Did you find inspiration in the biblical Judas in writing this story?
Well, I find inspiration in the biblical Judas story turned upside down, put on its head. But I also find inspiration with the amazing fact that the three protagonists of this very secluded, almost claustrophobic novel, those three who are initially total strangers, they change each other in the course of one winter, and they end up becoming almost a family. They end up almost loving one another, which to me is a very optimistic message.
What are Shmuel's main responsibilities for working for Gershon Wald? What's his job in the house?
Provide provocations for the old man to remain intellectually awake. The old man is an intellectual, a sharp thinker, a skeptic, a ferocious critic of all religions and all ideologies without exception. The old man Wald believes that all ideas in the world start with wonderful promises and end up with concentration camps and jihads and crusades and torture chambers and inquisition and gas chambers. So he's against all faith and all belief. Shmuel is a young idealist, decorating his room with posters of Che Guevara and Fidel Castro.
We should point out that the novel is set in 1959 in Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the two of them, the young man and the old man, they are like ice and fire. But they end up becoming almost father and son. And this is a secular miracle, mini-secular miracle in this novel.
There's obviously a reason that you chose 1959. Yeah. As the time to set this book. What was going on in Israel at the time?
Well, the late 50s, the early 60s, in the history of Israel, perhaps in the history of the Jews, these were the years of the mourning after. The 40s were cataclysmic. Holocaust, Israel's war of independence, struggle against the British mandate, then rapid mass immigration of millions of Jewish refugees from all over the world. Then came the mourning after. Shortage in food, long lines for water, no electricity, no telephones. The morning after the sound and the fury of the 40s.
To some degree, also, the setting of your memoir, A Tale of Love and Darkness. Mm-hmm. Now, there's the third character you mentioned, Atalia Abravanel. How's she related to Gershon Wald?
Well, she is really his daughter. Has been his daughter-in-law for a short time. She was married to his son, who died in Israel's War of Independence, and died a horrific death, not just a death, but a horrific, a blood-chilling death. She's a very angry and independent middle-aged woman, attractive, spiteful toward the entire male sex. She regards all the males, you and me included, as eternal teenagers who need their egos to be watered twice a day or else they turn sour. She thinks we are childish. She thinks men have been running the world for thousands of years and turned it into a slaughterhouse.
But Shmuel is a bit infatuated with her despite this and the age difference.
Well, Shmuel initially is sexually attracted to her to the point of being scorched by this desire. Somewhere in the course of the novel, his sexual desire, it's not fading away, but it's elated into gentle, delicate, tender love affair. Where exactly in the novel this sexual desire is transformed into love and tenderness, I don't know, and I've read the novel many times, and I still don't know where exactly this transition takes place.
And that's even though you wrote it. That's because writing sometimes you're not writing on a totally conscious level?
Do you really think that when I write a novel, I'm a puppeteer pulling the strings of
some
the characters?
Are. Some novelists are.
Not very lucky ones.
What are some of
in
the...
In my case, they keep surprising me. Atalia says to Shmuel Ash things that made me fall off my chair when she says them. I write those things for her and I fall off my chair with surprise. Or sometimes those characters bring tears to my eyes even as I write them.
Well, those ideas have to be lurking in the back of your head, even if you're not thinking of them consciously until you write them down.
It's more complex than that. It's like being pregnant. I have my characters inside me, but they kick me from within at will. I don't control their kicks.
Atalia's father is an important person in the story as well. He was disliked by many people.
Yes, he's one of the ghosts populating the novel. There are three protagonists and three ghosts, if you wish. So it is a piece of chamber music, a musical sextet, if you wish. Atalia's father, Shealtiel Abravanel, was one of the prominent Zionist leaders, a member of the Zionist executive in Palestine under the British. He was the only one who objected the idea of creating a Jewish state, challenged Ben-Gurion's leadership, and was ostracized, boycotted, and died like a stray dog in a self-imposed house arrest. Don't Google him. He never existed. He
comes but there were people like that.
Well, not exactly.
To some degree, Martin Buber was talking about a non-Jewish
Martin
state.
Martin Buber and the others, they believed in a binational state, whereas Maya Bravanel, he is opposed to the very idea of nation states universally. He doesn't want a binational state, Jewish-Arab. He doesn't want states at all. That's a step ahead of Martin Buber or Scholem.
And he is Gershon's arch enemy. The latest news from Israel is that the right-wing Israeli politicians have been heartened by the U.S. election and are calling for an abandonment of the two-state solution.
Well, birds of a feather, you know. Of course, they celebrate Donald Trump's election. Whether he's going to disappoint them, surprise them, or make them even happier, God knows. I'm not sure he knows yet. But abandoning the two-state solution might be an extremely dangerous, even deadly danger for the future of Israel.
You spoke at President Shimon Peres's funeral last month, and you said peace is not only possible, it is essential because we have nowhere to go from here, and the Palestinians also have nowhere to go from here. So why do you think it's so difficult? If everybody agrees that something should be done, is it just simply the details that have caused problems?
Let me tell you in passing, Peres was a close friend of mine and I of his for 40 years, but I never voted for him, not once, and he knew it, and it never stood in the way of our friendship. I think the majority of the Israeli Jews and the majority of the Palestinian Arabs know deep down in their hearts that there is no alternative to partition, two-state solution, turning the country into a semi-detached house. The leaders don't have the courage to do it. I'll put it this way. The patient is reluctantly and unhappily ready for the surgery, for the imputation. But the doctors are cowards, the doctors on both sides.
It's interesting when you read about some of the tensions within Israeli leadership. Mm-hmm. The Mossad, the secret police and such, seem to be a lot more liberal than the people who run the country.
Well, this has been the case in Israel for ever since the creation of the state. Many of the military leaders were more moderate and more dovish than the politicians. That was the case for many years, not just recently. And yes, it's true, 5 or 6 former heads of Israeli Mossad came forth very openly criticizing the government annexation policy and advocating a historical compromise with the Palestinians.
You recently, Natalie Portman, made a film adaptation of your memoir, A Tale of Love and Darkness. Were you happy with it?
Happy is a huge word, and I don't use it very easily. I think Natalie's film is a labor of love. It's a low-key, thoughtful, delicate, and very moving film. Does it cover the novel? It cannot cover the novel. Does it reflect the novel? I did not expect it to reflect the novel. I said to Natalie the first time she and I spoke about her idea of creating a film, I said, Natalie, for God's sake, in making the film, please be unfaithful in order to be loyal.
Well, the best films of adaptations of books are never 100% true to the book.
You know, this is like playing a violin concerto on the piano. You can do this successfully on one strict condition. Never try to force the piano to produce the sounds of the violin.
What's been the response to this book in Israel?
A Tale of Love and Darkness or Judas?
No, Judas.
Controversial. It is a book which presents some challenges to deeply accepted Zionist truth and to deeply accepted Jewish worldview. It is controversial, but then all my novels are controversial.
Amos Oz is the prize-winning author of many books. The one we've been discussing is Judas, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And Amos Oz will be speaking about this novel at Columbia's Institute for Israel and Jewish Studies in the Pulitzer Hall World Room. That's at 116th Street and Broadway tonight at 6 o'clock. Oh, at 8 o'clock, I'm so sorry. I misread that. And it's been my great pleasure having you on our show again. It's always a pleasure to have you here. I hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you, Lana. Thank you for having me. And let me just add in passing that Judas is translated and under translation into 31 languages, not just 12. Thank you very much.